Hi, this is Alex Hugon, a.k.a. Hughie.
Hi, this is Gregory Wilson, and you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Someone give me a tankard! This is going to get good!
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, I'm Dave, a.k.a. Eat the Surf.
Yo, and I'm Trey, a.k.a. Ashercon Zelo, and I'm Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
And you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast, episode 67.
So what have you been up to, Dave?
Not that much. Getting ready for
the school
year.
I heard you were dancing by yourself in the Feisty Chicken the other night.
Well, you know, I was kind of trying to... Thanks for sharing. Got a little of that Billy Idol feeling going, so I thought I'd go into Anacolia and the Feisty Chicken and dance with myself. No one was around, so they're off. There was a few people on the server, but they were somewhere else, and I had some character upkeep to do, so I went in and got a cat and brought him back over to the Feisty Chicken,
like,
and had some spice
cats,
cider.
Don't you?
I'm all about cats. No, actually.
And for those of you who don't know, the Anacolia is an NWN persistent world, and every Saturday they at 5 p.m. Central Time they hold an event called
Happy Hour.
Happy Hour at the Feisty Chicken, and actually I've played in that the last two Saturdays in a row.
Yeah, I always miss it. So, but I went to the Feisty Chicken when no one was there. Does that count?
I don't know. They might give you some XP for that.
There was no DM cookies sitting around.
And actually, the last Saturday when I played, we finished up a quest that was continued from the week before, where we had to go find a lost little girl in the caves, in these cobalt caves, and they had captured her. And they called her their shiny, and evidently they were like worshiping her as a goddess.
Was she blonde or something?
It was kind of weird, but anyway, yeah, she was blonde. Her name was Nelly.
Cool. I actually did spend some time mining as well. So,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I was all by myself. So, what the hell? Went and wandered through the cave and beat up some rocks with my hands.
Oh, yeah, that's how you get money. Yeah. Lots of money. Those gems that you get over there are like $2,000 a piece. 2,000 gold piece, sorry.
Found me a couple diamonds.
They don't know what dollars are.
So how about you? What you been up to?
Hey, I also downloaded Bruce Nilsson's Light Reborn series.
Ah.
And I started playing part one. Because I had played some of it back in the past, and he had DM'd for us, like way back when we first started the podcast, and so I decided I would try to play through all of those. So I started playing part one, but I didn't finish it. It's called the Orc Raid, and one of the big quests in there is you're supposed to go clear out all these orcs from outside the city or wherever that they're about to attack, so they don't attack the city. And anyway, I played for a couple of hours in that, and I got to the heart of the cave, to the back of the cave, you know, where the big the big boss is of the orcs.
Spoiler. Okay, yeah.
The orc champion. And I got de-leveled in my strength, got all the way down to like 3 and minus 4.
That's not very strong.
I didn't die, but I cleared him out, but I didn't die, but I couldn't walk. I could, like, I was barely taking steps, and I was at the back of this cave.
You're encumbered because you were carrying, like...
Yes, exactly. And so it was going to take me, like, it was going to take a good 30 minutes just to walk back to town.
Drop your stuff.
I couldn't have dropped enough stuff.
couldn't have carried your own head.
I didn't have any more restoration scrolls. I had a couple when I started, but I used them. And so I have to confess I gave up and loaded part 3 and started it.
There you go.
Part 3 is called The Children. And the children, and so far I found out that the children are actually elves, an elf community. And
cool.
I met this elf, and at first they weren't going to let us walk through their land, and then they decided they would, and that's cool. Where I'm at so far. Yeah. I kind of just started it.
That sounds good. How'd you hear about that mod?
Well, we had Bruce Nelson on our show several times back when we first started the podcast, and I've been saying for a long time that I want to start playing through all of the modules that we've ever talked about on the podcast, and so I started doing that.
I was trying to get you to say something about Michelle so that then we could run her thing, but that's right. Did she finish her thing? Her little project that she talked about doing reviews?
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing we can talk about. She's going to, since she plays so much, she's going to start recording herself, I guess, self-reviews of modules that she plays, and there'll be like 2-3-4 minute little segments that we'll include in the show.
Yeah, she's,
so y'all can start looking forward to that.
Yeah, she's like the penultimate gamer or player for Neverwinter Nights 1 or 2, I think. And
well, let's not give her too big of a head.
Well, yeah. The thing is, you know, she's played it all. You can't make her head any bigger, right?
Ooh.
No, she knows
we're
kidding.
In trouble now.
She knows I'm kidding. But but you know, when she says something about a mod, she means it. So, and you know, it's she always was saying how, well, geez, I'm not flowery and all that. I just shortened to the point, and it's like, exactly. That's what you want to know.
I think she's only going to review modules that she really, really likes.
Right.
If she thinks they're a flop, I think she's not going to do. She's not going to record anything.
Yeah, I doubt there's any thumbs down stuff she's going to be bringing out.
Right. But no negatives, just right. Positive.
Well, there's enough good stuff that to share. Why run around telling, cutting anything down?
Exactly. Well, before we get to the news, be sure and stay tuned. Later in the show, we're going to have an interview with Alex Hugon and Greg Wilson.
The third song, it's Jay did the interview, really good interview. I guess Greg Wilson has a book coming out next year. The Third Sign, and he had Hughie make a mod of it, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah. So, on to the news.
Hey, Rob McGinnis put out a new update over on his blog. He hasn't done that since May.
Yeah, with the new cool cover art for the
he put up some cover art that's going to be on the front of the box for Storm of Zaheer. It's pretty cool looking. It's like a skull with a snake coming out of it.
Ooh, yeah, it's scary.
We'll put that in our show notes.
Yep.
And actually, why hasn't he been? I'm glad that he updated that, but. Let's go. Somebody get on his case. Get him blogging. We crave more, Rob.
Well, yeah. Well, he says he's been kind of busy lately because
what? Because they're trying to put out a new expansion.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's true. The expansion is titled Neverwinter Nights 2: Storm of Zaheer, and with the expansion, we'll be doing some things that they haven't done before with a Neverwinter game. They're calling it NX2.
Yeah, everybody's kind of also really excited to see what they do with the overland travel. It's supposed to be a new deal, and lots of talk going on the forums about that, and them saying maybe they should release more information so that we stop talking and start.
Hey, he says they just hit alpha, so and they're pressing on to beta. Beta.
That's right. It's part of the show. We always mispronounce things. We're not.
I was trying to say it like Ben when Hoosie says it. Beta.
Beta. That reminds me. I haven't got to talk to you since I did that. Eric 32, aka Matt interview. And I just loved how he was saying that. A role to play. And
just, Abita.
It's an international show.
You betcha.
Yeah.
And hopefully, speaking of international, hopefully we're going to have some more international people on the show. I'm going to try to get QK from neverwentros.com. I've been talking to him. Hopefully, I'm going to get him for an interview pretty soon. Well, we're kind of short on news. We only have one other item this week, A Hunt Through the Dark for NWN 2 from Marcus Wayne Schlegel. He's the Hall of Fame author and recent Golden Dragon winner. I guess that Hunt Through the Dark is just went into final beta. And they're going to release it as a public beta.
I was going to say, it's out. Yeah, Skunk, our own Skunk, does some voice work in there.
Yep.
I think he's the only voice you hear at this point.
Way to go, Skunk!
Yeah. Hooray, Skunk!
Okay, so Neverwinter Night podcast game events. Do we have any coming up? I guess we don't really have any special ones coming up. We have been playing our weekly on Thursday nights.
How about you give a hit of the, because you got that calendar on the front page that's given things, but we haven't really announced that, have we?
Well, that's true.
Why don't you
have a calendar on the front page now.
Let me lead you into that, because it'll be get my voice.
Nice. Nice segue. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, Trey, why don't you tell the... Hey, Trey, why don't you...
Hey, I did that and I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the front page we have an upcoming events section over on the right-hand side of the website where you can see the dates and times that we'll have events coming up. So right now all we have scheduled are our regular reoccurring ones, Thursday night, game day, and then I also have the happy hour at Feisty Chicken on there. So check that out.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Thursday game day, we did play last Thursday.
Yeah, that was fun. A lot of spiders.
If you can call it playing.
No, it was. It was fun.
I goofed it up.
Well, yeah. You did something that was a little bit unknown. But no. Actually, what was weird is we found out a little bit about the difference between campaigns and modules in Neverwinter Nights 2, because we had found what we were looking for in the swamp, but of course left the body there. And
I don't see. And see what I was trying to do. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, it made total sense to your character going, you know what? We can't leave him there. And of course,
yeah, but I thought of it too late.
Yeah, but at that point, my character's like, well, you know, this guy's next to kin's going to want to know. Go ahead.
Well, here's what happened. When we got back to the gate, I realized, hey, I'm an elf, and we just left an elf back there. I shouldn't do that. And so I started role playing, and then I needed to go back and get the body. And
when we all said, no, we ain't going back. It's the swamp.
Right. and so I ran back, and Jay ran back with me because he said he would help me because he was supposed to be my friend. We knew each other from somewhere. That's what we were role playing at the beginning. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
Yeah.
And then,
that was when I was changing. But here's what happened. Diapers.
When we went there the first time, there was no map. At least I didn't see a map.
Oh.
I just all of a sudden we were there with the spiders and the body.
Right. Well, actually, you know what? Probably.
Oh, when I went back. I got a map. And I wasn't sure where to go.
Well, that's what I was going to explain. Is there's a difference between modules and campaigns, and in a module you just go to an area transition and you zip. Well, I was party leader, so then backtrack again. So this was a campaign, so it's actually a series of modules. So when you go to the swamp, that's actually a different module. So all the people playing go to the same place.
You poured it in there.
Right. So as the party leader, the first time we went, I clicked on the map and I went, so everybody went. Well, this time, you had ran off to that spot, and I was like, I'm going to go tell the next of kin of this guy because, you know, we found out what happened and that's what we were supposed to do. So I went to tell him everything is okay, and I got all the way to the guild, right? And all of a sudden, zap, I'm dead in the swamp. I'm like, huh? That ain't right.
I know, because when we... Okay, so how come there were so many spiders when we went back the second time?
It was night.
No, it was?
That's why we got there, you know, and it was like, let's go back. I'm like, it's the swamp. You want to go back to it in the middle of the night when we were seeing spiders all over? But we actually ended up with a lot of lag, though, right at that spot, so we all got lag killed right at the transition.
Yeah. I felt bad because I felt like I ruined the game.
No.
Skunk said I didn't, but I think he was just being nice.
No, the only thing that was... he was probably upset about the weird transition thing because I don't think he knew about the difference either between the campaign and mods. And that's... I don't think anyone caught my OOC comment where I said, not without the party leader, because I thought I thought you guys couldn't do that map without me. But I was mistaken. But.
So, Ernie, if you're listening, we're butchering Keep on Borderland.
But having fun doing it.
Yeah, we are still having fun.
Yeah.
We're still going to do that again. We're still going to keep going. I think this time I'll behave.
Yeah. Well, I think you behaved fine. Actually, that was fine. The thing that's weird is that we role played. I mean, you role played okay going back. Although you did make that one little error of saying that you had the body when the DM never told you he did. I think that was.
I know. I don't. Well, that's. I did that because when I went back, there was a map, and I thought, "Oh crap! I don't know where to go."
Right. Right.
So I was going to pretend. I was going to pretend like I had it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. But that's cool. Actually, you know what you could do.
But really,
I know you haven't done much deep.
In my defense, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in my defense, I wasn't really sure if Skunk was DMing us.
Oh, right. Well, see, that's
part
of his skill, actually.
I didn't know if he was DMing us or if he was just multiplayer alonging with us.
No, he's DMing. So that's...
I was a little unclear on that.
Yeah, and what you
can
do...
But now I know because I've talked to him since then and to Jay as well, because Jay was a little shaky on that as well, and so we were talking to Skunk,
yeah,
like either Friday or Saturday night, a couple of days later,
right?
And yeah,
you could have like done a DMFI tool and rolled something, or DM channeled him and said, and he probably would have just had you hang. Well, he at that point still didn't know about the transition thing, because when you go back to the swamp, you go to the new module, and. Mm-hmm. He'd have had to have had you hang out there for a bit and pretend that you were there even though you were just standing around in the field.
Yeah, and plus, I'm still getting used to role-playing in Neverwinter Nights 2. I haven't done that much. I've mostly role-played in Neverwinter Nights 1.
Yeah, I didn't like how... I've got, like, some, you know, chats and emotes stuck in my quick bar stuff. But sometimes when you transition, that stuff disappears, but it's still there. But the icons are gone, so it's like...
I wish you could sit down. I don't like the fact that you can't sit down.
Yeah, you can kneel, but...
You can. Oh, well. It's still
there.
Still coming along. It'll get there. Yeah. Okay, on to podcast updates.
As everybody's probably noticed, we've had some issues that have continued with episode 66, that there was an issue that kept everyone from getting the latest episode. But, well, it doesn't happen often, but I guess Jay's connection at his house disconnected and it didn't reconnect. So he went home after lunch. You guys probably talked about that at lunch, huh? Sent him home. And
well, he was taking half a day off, so he was going home anyway.
Yeah, you know, he probably was sweating it. You guys might not know that the whole team, whether we're involved in the episode or not, are pretty... We get pretty... Not freaked, I guess. We want you guys to get your fix of the podcast. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
So now we have our Lisbon account, and it's active, and we're going to start moving files there as soon as we get a few updates to the site, and that's when we'll start doing it.
So, yeah, and we also, donations are continuing to come in. We really appreciate that. That's going to help us support that Libsyn account, because that is going to cost us a little bit more than what we were paying. So
yeah. Say, didn't you start a new... what, a new page that says who's donated and such?
Yeah, we've created a new way to support that effort. You can there's a new button now called PayPal Subscribe, where you could set up a reoccurring monthly donation of $5 if you want. So some of you were I think Andarian, a.k.a. Tony Donadio, he gave us $5 since the last episode, so we appreciate that, Tony. And he was actually one of the ones asking, hey, I can only donate $5? Come on. Do you think I'm that cheap? And actually, I didn't know that there was a limit on there, so I know there wasn't at the beginning because we've had some people donate $25 before back in November and December of 2007. So now I guess it's time for our interview, Dave.
Okay, so here's Jay interviewing Alex Hugon and Greg Wilson. It's really a good interview, so grab a cup of Joe and enjoy.
Okay, today I had a chance to sit down with Gregory Wilson and Alex Hugon, the authors and co-creators of an up-and-coming module, The Third Sign. Greg, would you go ahead and tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay, thanks, Jay. I am a college professor. I teach at St. John's University in New York City, and I teach a variety of different things. I started with a specialty in Renaissance drama, but I also now teach courses in creative writing and fantasy and science fiction. And so I'm the original author of the book, The Third Sign, which is going to be published by Five Star Press in June of 2009. And so that's a little bit about me.
Alex, same question.
Sure. So my name is Alex Hugon. Many of you may know me as Hughie. I'm 19 years old. I go to Harvard College, and I am tentatively majoring in computer science right now. I've been around the Neverwinter Nights community for about 4 years now, and I've been modding since Neverwinter Nights 1. And I am also a writer for Ossian Studios, working with Neverwinter Nights 2 stuff right now. And that's about it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So let's tell us a little bit about the book and the background behind it.
Sure. The book is completed, and actually it was completed a while ago. I started writing, I'd written plays and short stories and things like that, but I'm the beginner and not ender of probably 10 at least different novels, because I always get fired up for, you know, writing a work, and I said, sit down, I think this is going to be great, and then I kind of got bored with it about a chapter in. And this was most of my writing career up until the mid-90s, and in 1990, I think, six, I actually sat down and wrote the first couple of chapters of this book, The Third Sign, which at the time didn't even have a title. And again, I was all, you know, sort of fired up. It was right after I got my master's degree, so I thought, I'm sick of academic writing now. I want to do a little bit of creative writing. And then it all kind of petered out. So fast forward about another 6-7 years, and in 2002, right after I got my PhD, I again was in that tired of academic writing mold, but the difference was now I had actually had to write a dissertation to get my PhD, which meant I actually had to finish something. So I knew I could do it. I knew I actually had the discipline now to be able to finish the book. So in 2002, I started writing. I took The Third Sign back up, and I had to make some serious adjustments because the Greg of, you know, 2002 was a much different and, I hope, better writer than the Greg of 1996. And I sat down and started writing the book again, and I finished it. I mean, I got married in the interim, and I had my first two teaching jobs, so I had a lot of other stuff going on, so it wasn't super speedy. But I got done with it in, I think, September of 2004, and started to query agents and publishers. And I had some near misses. It's a very crowded market. That's one of the reasons that I went to the Neverwinter Nights community, actually, for promotion, which I guess we'll talk about later. But it was a very crowded market, and so I got quite a number of nibbles, actually, people who asked for partial manuscripts, and I had a couple of what I would classify as near misses. One very close, where the agent was just a bit, you know, was going back and forth with me and said I really liked this, and finally decided to pass because she said that, you know, fantasy is oversold, and there's too much fantasy that's out there. So I, at that point, kind of hit a dead end. And in 2005, I was at Gen Con, where I'm going to be going next week, by the way. And I was at Gen Con, and I went to a thing about small presses. And there was a guy named John Helfers, who's well-known in the fantasy book community, the literature community, who is the editor of Five Star Press. He's actually the editor of a book packager, which puts together books and sells them to Five Star Press, which is a division of Thompson Gale. And so I liked his presentation, and I talked to him afterwards, and he told me, you know, the only reason people say that fantasy is oversold is because they keep buying it. So I don't really know why it would be oversold, but, you know, so I realized that this was the guy that I could work with. So at the end of at the end of the year, I submitted him the full manuscript. He made some edits and made some suggestions, and I submitted it again at the very beginning of 2007. And at the end of 2007 is when he finally made an offer to purchase the book. So it's just to show you that there's a long time, you know, in between when you start thinking about something and when it actually is going to see print. And so it's now been picked up by Five Star, and they're going to be publishing it in June 2009. And I guess the last thing I'll say is where the whole conversion part comes in is I was trying to think about what I could do to promote it, because Five Star, although it is well respected in the industry, it's a small press. That means that it's not going to get the same kind of bookstore distribution that, say, a book from Tor or Del Rey or something like that would. My goal for my next novels, I've already done completed a second book and I'm working on a third, is to get those sold to, you know, sort of the larger mainstream publishers. But in the meantime, I wanted to have something which is a quality product, and I think this will be. But I needed to figure out how to promote it. And I thought, well, I'm a gamer too. I play Neverwinter Nights also. And, you know, there you have a group of people who are fantasy fans to begin with. They're role players, so they're going to like stories, presumably. And, you know, maybe I could go and get someone to do a conversion. And so I went to the forums and looked around, and I found this guy, Huey, who seemed to, you know what he was doing and had a lot of good modules to his credit, and obviously was a Hall of Fame designer. And so I sent him an email and said, hey, you don't know me, but I have this proposal for you. And I sort of explained how I wanted to, you know, get this book conversion. And it was funny because when I came back to my desktop after sending him that message, I had two emails waiting from him. The first one was very polite, you know, I appreciate the offer, but, you know, unfortunately, I've got a lot of stuff on my plate. And then the second one was, wait a minute, did you say June of 2009? I said, oh, that's a little bit different. Yeah. And so we ended up talking and then working out a contract. And so that's how I got a hold of Alex. And as we'll talk about, I think I was very fortunate to get a hold of him to do this. So the third sign module is really designed to promote the book, and I hope will also stand on its own as being an excellent game as well. And I have no doubt that it will do that. So that's the not so brief, I'm afraid, but I did the best I could story of
that's good. Is this a D&D setting for the Forgotten Realms, or is this a setting that you've created for the book?
It's a setting that I've created entirely by itself. I mean, I would say my favorite authors growing up are going to be people that are listeners to this podcast will be familiar with. I loved J.R.R. Tolkien. My father read me, you know, not just fantasy. He read me a lot of different stuff, but I was always interested in kind of epic fantasy. And, you know, even though my second book, which I just completed, which is called Icarus, is in a different world and a different series, it's also fantasy, a very different kind of book. But at least initially, what I wanted to write was something similar to what I had read. And I grew up reading the Tolkien books. I grew up playing D&D. I certainly read all the Dragonlance books. I've met Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. And I, you know, so I'd say that it's certainly not a Forgotten Realms setting, but I even was a dungeon master, you know, I've done DMing and game mastering and stuff like that. So I'm certainly familiar with kind of creating stories and knowing about the Forgotten Realms world. So it is its own unique world. The world is called Clune. The world is called Elmine, and the nation in particular is called Clune. In fact, the series is called The Chronicles of Clune. And so it's its own unique world, but I think it's heavily indebted to sort of the standard fantasy settings. There are no orcs, though, so fear not. No orcs, no elves, no dwarves. But the standard fantasy settings of swords and horses and a little bit of magic thrown in for good measure, that's definitely there.
But there is the Elmenar.
Yeah, that's true. The Elmenar are the initial race, the first race that were created by the Dreamer. Without getting too heavily into the creation mythology, in this world, the world is assumed to have been dreamed into existence by a creature, a being who still dreams to this day. At least that's the mythology. And the first race of beings that he dreamed into existence were these creatures called the Elmenar, who sort of sing the world into existence as they move around. And through a variety of things I won't get into, the Elmenar have sort of withdrawn from the rest of the world when humanity appeared. And so humankind now, you know, looks at the Elmenar with some bit of suspicion, feeling that they were sort of abandoned by them. But there are some, including one of the characters in the book, Arvin, who's a major character, who doesn't see it that way and thinks that the Elmenar are very closely connected, in fact, to humankind, and that eventually people will remember that again. So there are some creatures that are not, there's definitely creatures that are not standard humans in this book, no question about that.
Well, I thought it was very interesting, the opposing viewpoints away against the Elmenar from Arvin and Kaelin.
That's right. Well, Arvin himself, you know, Arvin was a member of a group that was called the Covenant. The background of the story is that 10 years before the beginning of this book, Clune had been ruled by, I guess you would call him, and he's called just the Overlord in the book, but it was basically enslaved, and they had thrown off their slavery by their enslavement through the group of heroes that was called the Covenant, one of whom was killed in the process of doing this. And Arvin, Arvin Elrond, who's a character who's known as he's a woodwalker, and he's a forest walker and a woodsman, and I guess he's sort of like a ranger type character, and Neverwinter Nights people might be familiar with that kind of guy. He has withdrawn from the world himself to a degree because of his bitterness over having lost as many people as he has, friends and people that he cared about dearly. But, you know, at base, of course, he still cares about his country. He still cares about the people that he's chosen to protect. And so he knows, you know, he's been in contact for years with, you know, members of the Elmenar. They have not withdrawn entirely. And he knows the real story of what happened, and he knows that it was not a matter of abandoning humans. Whereas Kaelin, who's a young boy of about, when the book starts, I think he's about 16, I want to say, maybe 17. Kaelin grew up in a city. Kaelin is kind of a roguish type character, I guess you might say. He's got troubles with his family. You know, he doesn't fit in. He's a typical, you know, he's a typical teenager. And he has been taught that, you know, the Elmenar abandoned them, and the Elmenar are this, and the Elmenar are that. And so he's got a very sort of standard Clunian worldview of the way that the Elmenar are. And Arvin, you know, knows things a bit differently. And so when they meet, part of what Arvin is doing is sort of explaining to him the way things actually are, as opposed to what Kaelin had been taught they were. So,
well, I thought that interaction between them two did a great job of filling in the background of the world and where it sets right now, and get you grounded for what you know is going to be coming, or you can feel the undertide of the story pulling you to, of course, you know, this epic thing that's fixing to happen to these guys. Right. So I thought that was great.
Well, thanks. I hope so.
Not to mention Arvin's companions, or not necessarily companions, but I guess in a sense they're companions, because they don't...
Sure.
He doesn't own them, but, you know, they...
No. Yeah, a hawk and a wolf that he has with him. Yeah, I think that when I first started writing that, I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool if you just had a hawk and a wolf? And then later on, I had to think, okay, now we can put 1996 Greg aside and think, now, how are we going to actually integrate them? Do we want to get rid of them? And what I started realizing is that part of what's at stake at Clune is much more than just the limited scope of each of these characters. I mean, it jumps from perspective to perspective during the course of the book. And one of the things that I wanted to communicate was there's more at stake for more than just human beings. One of my complaints that I have with a lot of fantasies is that, you know, you open them up and it's always, first of all, you have the standard cliches about the, you know, the shepherd kid who doesn't understand, you know, and then all of a sudden it turns out that he happens to be the one true ruler of, you know, and there are elements, there are aspects of that sort of maybe play into my book. But one of the things that frustrates me, it's always about, you know, saving the world for the human beings. And, you know, there are other things on even our Earth than human beings, though we may choose to forget it at times. And so one of the things I wanted to indicate was that there are other people here involved, other creatures involved besides just people. And so in a way, this is a fight for all of them, not just the human beings themselves.
Well, I also noticed when reading through the chapters that there is a stark contrast between the prologue and the first chapter, where Kaelin and Arvin meet themselves in the, like you said, in the Razorwood, in the forest, uh-huh. in the natural, very natural surroundings, which are befitting for, and when I was reading through this, I was like, you know, Arvin sounds like a ranger, because, you know, the way that his whole characteristics and everything sound like a ranger. But then you go to the next chapter where you're in the corrupt, dark, rainy city.
Clunilar, yes.
And you give a completely different atmosphere, and rightly so, for the characters that are introduced into that chapter.
Yeah, well, I thank you. I appreciate that. One of the things I was trying to do there, too, I think, again, my other pet peeve about fantasies is that they often are written, or at least some of them are written, from one perspective alone, even in terms of how they view the villains. So Terry Goodkind is one of the worst offenders about this. If you read, you know, Wizard's First Rule or any of those kinds of books, it's you really can see who the bad people are from many miles off. There's no question about it. You know, even they, and I just don't understand this, think of themselves as evil. You know, like, oh, what I'm doing right here is terrible. I mean, look, the majority of people do not walk around thinking that they're doing evil things. Even people who are bad people believe that they're justified in some way for doing what they do. So the character of Blesion Drolnar, who's the one that you're referring to, who's this kind of merchant behind the scenes in Chapter 3, I believe it is, right. You know, Blesion is a character who believes that what he's doing is the right thing to do. He certainly understands it from the perspective of getting himself power and money and prestige and all that kind of thing. I mean, he doesn't, you know, he's not pretending that he's doing charity, but he also doesn't sit around thinking to himself, I'm such a bad person, but I just have to do more evil because how else can I get evil into the world? Yeah, that's just not realistic. So,
right.
One of the things that I'm trying to do is to, as I change perspectives, is to get into their heads a little bit and think what would be the perspective of someone who was used to ruling from behind the scenes. And that to me is always much more effective than just the cookie cutter, look, he's got a black hat, so we know he's a bad guy, you know, type of evil character that you sometimes get.
Well, I have to bring Alex in on this part of it because, Alex, this is making a great story, I have to admit, because I was loving every bit of it, but that has to create a challenge for creating a module to follow along with the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. It's different from making, like, a traditional story where you're the one who makes up everything, and in terms of brainstorming, like, a module or a video game idea, I've done plenty of brainstorming, and I found that as far as, like, creating the story in your head goes, I've gotten much, much more used to, like, when I'm brainstorming, coming up with things that would suit themselves well to a video game. And in this case, it's not necessarily always like that when you're doing a conversion. And, I mean, that's not to say anything bad about the quality of Greg's book, because obviously it's really good, otherwise I wouldn't have agreed to convert it. But
right.
There are just some scenes in there that they don't really suit themselves as nicely to what I guess most people traditionally think of as a video game. And so, I mean, the example that sticks out the most in my head, really, is that the book is, you know, guaranteed to be linear at all times. I mean, there's one story, there's the characters that follow this plot, and so you could imagine how I could just convert this book, into a video game by just doing cutscene by cutscene. It's just more of an interactive novel, if that,
right,
in video game form. And that this is something that Greg and I both agreed early on we want to avoid. I mean, it's really,
right,
it's supposed to be a playable version of the novel where the player is having fun and, you know, playing. I mean, that's the whole idea.
Right.
And so making a playable game out of a, by nature, linear novel, it can be challenging at times. But, I mean, that's the whole point of making the game out of it, to try to overcome this challenge and to make it something that's fun to play, and that's not just a straight, you know, not just a movie out of cutscenes.
So I'm assuming to steer away from that, you're going to be taking some interesting twists and approaches in the module. Do you care to elaborate on any of those?
Right, sure. So I guess I'll use an example, since that's, I guess, the easiest way to understand it. So, for example, one of the opening themes of the game, I guess, it doesn't go in chronological order, is one part of the book. There are some flashback scenes, which you won't get to in the first three chapters that are available on the website, but later on in the book there are some flashbacks, and so from a game point of view, I figured I would start the game in chronological order, because it just makes a little more sense that way. So in that way, it's you can kind of see how it's more of an adaptation than a straight conversion. But anyways, regardless. So you start out in the city of Clun Anor, which is Caelan's hometown. And Caelan is in the marketplace. It's during the Feast of Accession, Festival of Accession, which is, you know, kind of a typical festival happening in the city where there are lots of merchants all around, you know, hawking their wares. There are a bunch of people walking around, lots of visitors, lots of tourists. Basically just lots going on. And in the book, the scene that takes place in Clun Anor is basically just Caelan is going to steal from a fruit stand to provide for his family. And it all happens, you know, the theft itself happens in the space of, you know, maybe a paragraph or two. And then he basically, stuff happens from there, which is just like straight plot progression that eventually brings him back to his home. Now, in the game itself, I'm kind of expecting this whole sequence to play out in a matter of more like an hour. And this is because, you know, Caelan starts on one end of the market district and, you know, the fruit merchant stand is on the other side. I mean, if the player wishes, they can just walk over to the fruit stand and kind of trigger the events that happens to further the plot. But between Caelan's starting point and the merchant's fruit stand, there's a bunch of stuff going on. And there are tons of people to talk to and kind of little side quests to do and participate in. And basically, the player would be missing out if they just went straight, you know, plot by plot, event by event, triggering things in the order of the novel.
Right.
So I mean, that's kind of what I've been signed on to do. I guess my job is to bring the creativity to the table that isn't the novel's creativity, because Greg has taken care of that nicely. So I guess, yeah, what I'm bringing to the table is I'm kind of reading between the lines. I mean, the novel itself outlines the basic plot progression, which I'm going to have to include, and which is really like the whole point of playing the game, you know, getting to,
right.
to experience the novel in an interactive environment. But that interactive environment is what I'm adding to it. And so there's basically just a bunch of people to talk to and a bunch of side quests to embark on and a bunch of stuff going on between the, like, plot points, you could say. And so I'm kind of making those up as I go along based on other sections of the book. Like, I'm trying to, like, in these sections, for example, I'm trying to incorporate lore that's somewhere in the book,
right.
but that maybe I wouldn't be able to work into, like, a central plot point. And so I'm just trying to really build the world and make it so that the player gets accustomed to this place, to Clune. And so that's basically what I'm doing. So the example, I guess, just to restate that, is that I'm just fleshing out these segments that are, like, plot by plot, and I'm just building playable segments between them, kind of using my own imagination and using other stuff in the book to build off of that.
And one of the things that I wanted to say about that is I was very, very lucky. I mean, it became very clear to me as I sort of got into conversations with Alex that I had indeed picked the right person, because, you know, Alex is himself a writer, and so he has a writer's sensibility while having a design, you know, ability that I clearly lack in terms of the game side of things. And so one of the things that was important for me was, you know, obviously the number one reason to have this is to promote the book. That's I really want people to be able to play it and say, this is great, I want to buy the book also. But I did want to have it be a playable game, and that involves obviously doing things like, as Alex said, fleshing areas out. You know, I think that he's done really an excellent, a wonderful job at finding, you know, reading between the lines in the way that he said. You know, if you go into the, if you watch the movie Star Wars, not the terrible Phantom Menace, but I mean the original Star Wars, right, the cool Star Wars, and you go into that wretched hive of scum and villainy, Mos Eisley, right? If you think about the first time they walk into the cantina and the camera pans around and you see, you know, this hammerhead guy, and then there's a blue elephant playing a keyboard, and then there's this thing that turns out to be a Wookiee, and then, you know, there are all these creatures. Now, at the time, Lucas doesn't spend, you know, the equivalent of 5 pages in a book or, you know, 10-15 seconds of a movie saying, and this guy was the blue elephant from blah planet, and he right. lived in the world of, you know, that's that kind of over description of things, I think, can sometimes kill a world. But it's in the background, right? I mean, if you asked me where, you know, what does this go to, I could give you a sense of where I was thinking of. But most of that stuff doesn't appear in the book, because you want people to have a sense that you're on the edge of a larger world. When you walk into that cantina, you think, wow, this is a universe that we're talking about. And so, you know, what Alex is doing in fleshing out these areas for the game side of things, I think, is totally in line with that idea. It's taking stuff that would be there and sort of bringing it out in detail in a way that would otherwise, you know, not be available to people, but was always in the background, even if I don't have time to specifically bring it up in the course of what is already a pretty long book.
So obviously there's a lot of collaboration going on between the two of you, and I know that, you know, it sounds like it. Alex really grasped the vision that you had with this, but what kind of mechanisms do you guys use to collaborate? Greg, do you get to play some parts of the module? Or?
I do. I've actually played through part of the prologue as well. That's been one of the great things for me as an author, has been the experience, and I'm sure this is true also for authors who have their books made into movies, which may also happen. I would love to think would also happen to my book someday, but. You know, getting to see the world that you envisioned being put into some kind of visual context, into a game or a movie context. I actually wrote about this on my blog and my site. That's, first of all, there's just the wow, that's cool factor. You know, holy cow, I wrote this, you know, or I wrote something that led to this. And secondly, I think for me, for writers, it's always about communication. It's always about communicating the vision you have to a larger world. And the fact that Alex, and it sounds like you and other people who've read the book, have picked up on that world and know kind of what I was aiming for, and then can do things different with their imagination, and that's totally fine. It doesn't have to be the only the way that I saw it, but getting the basic thrust of what I was going for, that's really exciting. And as I've gone through the scenes that Alex has completed so far, I also had a chance to walk through some of Arvin's home. He really got it. I mean, he's really gotten a sense of what the feel of the world is, what's going on below the surface, and that's the mark of someone who's not just a talented computer game designer, which of course is something which I needed for this, but also someone who's a talented writer and understands the connection between the two.
Yeah, I would love to see Arvin's home in game. That would be awesome.
Oh yeah, you'll get a chance to see it, all parts of it, cool. including the slide.
Well, one of the things I'll say about the world that you've created from the moment you start, it's not a world that's hard for you to comprehend or understand. It easily lends yourself, you just kind of meld yourself into the story, which is, to me, a good sign of a good story. And that's what I thought was really good about the Tolkien and C.S. Lewis books and stuff, is that you could make yourself part of the story and feel like this could have happened. You know, this could be a world that really does exist. And that's an element to your story that I really picked up on while reading it. So, big points for that one. Now, Alex, are you having any challenges balancing that in a story?
Well, I guess I'll start off by saying that I totally agree, and that when I first read through The Third Sign in its entirety, I definitely found that it was a world that I could identify with, and I didn't have a whole lot of questions as to, like, what was going on in the world, who various groups were, such as is the case in some books, where you're like, wait, where they throw off, like, a bunch of vocabulary terms early on, and you're like, what the heck is going on? Who are these people? Are they people?
Right.
I mean, in this case, it's pretty clear what's going on. It's just, it's a different world. And the original aspects, while original and fresh, are not too hard to understand and, like, get a grasp of. So that was very nice. And so, in terms of, like, translating the world to a video game form, not having a whole lot of challenges on that front, which is really nice. I mean, that's not to say that I'm not spending the majority of my time doing that, because, I mean, outside of the obvious exterior area design, time sync, I am spending most of my time just brainstorming how to incorporate various, like, world characteristics into the video game. And one thing that's nice about having a video game, about having all this freedom in an area that you're walking around in, is that I can kind of fill it in with as many people as I want and make them whoever I want, so as to highlight various aspects of the world. And so one of the first people that you'll talk to in the game, most likely, I mean, if you go from a, like, proximity to character point of view, one of the first people that you'll talk to is a horse merchant. And he'll tell you all about, you know, his personal suspicions and what he's going on, and he'll make fun of you because you're a little, you know, like, street urchin. And I mean, the first few characters, they'll tell you about the world if you ask them questions, and they'll kind of go off on their own little rants and tangents, and they'll kind of unveil gradually things that are happening in the world right now to kind of give you a sense that you are there and that things are unfolding around you. And that's kind of the goal that I'm going for, and I'm kind of going character by character, on a character by character basis, trying to figure out, like, what can this character that they're talking to, what can they kind of add to the story? What can they add to the sense of being in a world?
Yeah. This is being written in Neverwinter Nights 2 toolset, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, God, yes. if I were doing it in Neverwinter Nights 1, first of all, I would probably be halfway done. Because of the exterior area design. And second of all, we have the mounted horses stuff.
Right.
Yeah, we're working on that. That's going to be an issue.
Yeah, we're working on that. I mean, that's one of the really nice things about 1.69 is that we now have those rideable horses, which are awesome, by the way. Kudos to BioWare.
Right.
And the DLA. But, yeah. But Neverwinter Nights 2, I mean, the exterior area design takes, like, 10 times longer. And I'm getting the hang of it after, I mean, I did Moonshadows, like, back in September of 2007 it was released, so I've been working on that for plenty of time. And with Ossian stuff for Mysteries of Westgate, I've been around in the Neverwinter Nights toolset for a while, but still, I mean, exterior design takes forever.
So are you looking at any custom content that'll be used in this module? I know you mentioned the rideables. Was there anything else that might be coming of interest?
Yeah, definitely. In terms of custom content, we're still looking for some people to do some creature resources for us, but, I mean, we have some stuff lined up in that regard, but if we could have more, I mean, basically the more the merrier. There's a few things that are kind of unique to the world of Clune that it would be nice to have, and that, I mean, with some improvisation, we could get it done, and it would be a little iffy. I mean, we could just definitely use some creature models right now. So if there are any modelers out there listening to this,
yes, please.
Okay,
and I can even if you're able to do a good amount of modeling for us, then I could even send you a free copy of the book, or you know, I mean, so there are, you know, I don't know how much swag an author can provide, but I'll do what I can.
Yeah,
authors are not usually known for having lots of financial resources to throw around.
Yes, well, that's and I certainly can can attest to that. That's the whole point of the game, is to give me those financial. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So back to custom content. So not kind of the more traditional custom content of, like, you know, brand new creatures, brand new placeholds, that kind of thing. We don't have any of those yet. But we do have voice acting, courtesy of Greg and a bunch of his connections, capital C. and so we have some really good voice acting so far, and I assume it's going to keep on coming at that high quality. So that's really nice. It's something that I haven't really had a whole lot of experience with in the past, because in terms of, like, Neverwinter Nights 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2 work, I just never really had the resources at my disposal. And I certainly wasn't going to be doing any voice acting, nor do I plan to. So
do you have a feel right now for about the length of time you're thinking of a gameplay for the third sign?
That's a hard question. Someone asked me the same question a little while ago, and I didn't really know what to say. I mean, it really depends on how many of these segments, of these sections in the book, I can find and have the idea to flesh them out in some way that is playable. I mean, it's going to be long. I can just say that. But I don't really have a good sense yet. I mean, basically, it's going to be as long as I can make it by June 2009. I basically plan on working on it. That's my Neverwinter Nights 2 commitment, in terms of amateur stuff, from here until, you know, June 2009. And from there, we'll see what happens.
Although, so if you get to the end of the module and then there's just one big, long, you know, half-hour-long cutscene, you'll understand what happened.
Exactly.
Exactly. But actually, cutscenes take infinitely long.
Time passed, and you
know. It's more like if you get to the end and you're like in the middle of a playable segment, and then you arrive at the end and there's like a guard waiting and telling you, "Oh, you can't go any further." Then you'll know what happens.
Right.
We have a custom soundtrack which is being composed by one of Greg's friends, and it sounds awesome so far.
If you go to my band's website, you'll hear the music specific. I mean, like, it's one of the guitarists in my band. So you can get a feel for his work if you go to our band website, which is linked through my site. So.
And that's gregoryawilson.com, by the way.
Yeah. Yes.
Just in case. And so, let's see. So we have the custom soundtrack, which is going to kind of make it stand out on its own. We have the voice acting. It's going to be a long and polished story. That's kind of one of its features. And, you know, it is a professional story, as that is going to be published in June 2009. We have the original setting, which, I mean, it isn't custom content per se, but it brings about a bunch of other custom content, kind of as being a custom setting. There's just a bunch of stuff that needs to be accounted for. And so that kind of brings along its own custom flavor, you could say. And then you have the multiple protagonists, which I think we've covered on already for a bit, but that's going to be the real thing that sets it apart, I think, from a gameplay point of view, which is that you'll be controlling Kaelin to start out with, and controlling him until it becomes logical in the course of the story, in the flow, to split it up and take control of a different character. Haven't decided yet if we're going to have two or three. I think we're going to have three playable characters, and also haven't figured out from a scripting point of view how we're going to handle that kind of switch over from character to character. But I have some ideas about how I could pull it off scripting-wise. And if not scripting-wise, I mean, there are the more traditional ways where I just split it up module by module of who's playing what and at what point you are in the story. And so, basically, it's going to work is what I'm trying to say. And that you're going to be controlling multiple protagonists, which is kind of, it's not going to be like the traditional Neverwinter Nights 2 where you're controlling a group of people and, you know, you can switch between them. I mean, like, individually, you'll be controlling a protagonist at a certain time, and then you'll switch over for a completely different segment of the story in a completely different part of the world. So those will be happening simultaneously.
Was there anything else that you guys wanted to tell us about either the book or about the module in development?
Alex?
I can't really think of anything off the top of my head. I mean, we've basically covered on it. I mean, June 2009 is when it's expected to be released. I mean, there is the blog, I guess. If you want to keep track of our progress, it's http://hugiegames.com. That's hugiegames.com/TTS/. And that'll bring you to the Third Sign blog, which Greg and I both occasionally write on. And that'll be where you find the screenshot gallery as well. There's a link to Greg's website, And you can basically just keep track on our quote-unquote daily progress on the module. And I'm basically going to be working on this through June. So
how, if anyone is out there that would like to do custom content for you or voice acting, so how would they, where would they need to go to contact you? Is this where you want them to go, was HugieGames.com?
Sure. HugieGames.com provides a means of contacting me, and you can also just, like, post a comment on the blog.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you post a comment, then I get notified if something gets posted, so I can get back to someone that way. Or just email me at alex@hugon.com, or you can email Greg at gregawill@gmail.com. And either of us would be happy to field your email and, you know, try to get you involved if you
Sounds
have
good.
The skills that we could use.
So you're going to try to release the module at the same time that the book is released. So you're trying to
the hope is to release it close to that time, or you know, if we're able to release it maybe a month earlier to build up interest, that's fine. But either way, I mean, around the same time, with the hope being that as people play it, they will like it. And you know, my thought from the promotion standpoint is, I think Moon Shadow's now, what is it, Alex, up to like 18,000 downloads or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so my thought has been, you know, just looking at it from pure numbers thing, I said, well, you know, if we get the same number of people downloading this module, and if we get, you know, 1% of those people are interested, you know, that's the 180 some odd books that wouldn't be sold otherwise. And I think, you know, one of the things that Alex talked about flowing out areas, you want to get a sense of what the book was originally, because that's what I do. If I go in and I see a movie conversion first, or if I play a game, I sometimes think, I'd like to see the book that this all came from and have a chance to read that, especially role players. You know, maybe if I was trying to, if I had contacted Alex and I was like, hey, can we do a, you know, a Halo 3, you know, level or something, I might not get as many people interested in actually reading because they'd rather be playing Halo 3. But in this case, I think that there's enough people who are interested in the story, because that's why they are role players and that's why they're playing these games in the first place, that they might go over to the book itself. And so the hope is that this is going to be able to serve in a cross-promotional way. You know, as people read the book, I'm going to mention the fact that there's a game there. Hopefully that will cause them to download the game if they're Neverwinter Nights players and they didn't know that this existed, and obviously vice versa, the people who play the game will hopefully go out and buy copies of the book as well and become involved with this world, because this is not the end of it. I mean, I have other books planned, I have other things going on, so this is something we're going to pick it up and then it's finished, and then you just sort of sit there going, that's, I wish it weren't over. There are other things down the road, and hopefully if this goes well, Alex and I will be able to work on other projects in the future also. So this is the beginning, not the end, is the theory.
So I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us, and thanks again.
Well, thank you, Jay. It was
thanks
fun.
For having us, Jay. We appreciate it.
And we're back.
Okay, so I think that's about it for this week, Dave. Don't forget, everyone out there, you can still purchase your NWN Podcast t-shirts by going to the Cafe Press store. Located at cafepress.com, NWN Podcast, or we have a link on the main page, big green one, I think it's blinking neon that says T-shirt. T-shirt. T-shirt.
T-shirt. It's subliminal. You might not see that.
Oh, speaking of T-shirts, we need to do another T-shirt contest.
That's what I was going to say.
Actually, the other day at lunch, Jay and I was thinking, hey, let's do something different. Maybe this time, last time, you know, we gave out a T-shirt. Based on if you made comments on our shows, it's the episodes, and I don't know, maybe we should do that one more time, but we're thinking maybe for the next contest,
listener hellos.
No, oh, okay. we'll use if you've given us a donation, we'll throw your name into the hat.
There you go, and back it up from the start of whenever we started having problems. And
oh yeah. No, we'll go all the way back.
The beginning.
To the beginning.
There you go.
2007 from the first, because Jay has a list. I don't know if you've seen the new page on the front. Uh-uh. He's listed out everybody that's given donations, so we have a list of those so far. So we're thinking about doing that as a T-shirt contest.
How about some new, can we have some new stuff? I was thinking, what was it? Somebody mentioned is oven mitts or something. I want to do oven mitts.
I don't know. I'll have to see if we can do that. Are you going to knit them?
Oh, no. They have. They already have those. They have mugs and everything. Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying. Can we pick.
I think we have to upgrade our account to get stuff like that.
No, I don't think so, because they... It's,
you don't think so?
No, because they want you... The more stuff they sell, the more money they make.
Okay. Okay, Dave. I think that's it for this week.
So, thanks for listening, and until next week...
Get in game.
Level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geese, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2008.
I'm Coco for Coco Puffs.
Cuckoo for Coco Puffs.
Cuckoo for I can't say it.
Coco for Cuckoo Puffs. Cuckoo for Peepo.
I was practicing that all day, too. Cuckoo for Coco Puffs. Cuckoo for Coco Puffs.
Sorry, that used to be one of my favorite characters as a kid, so. And my favorite
Cuckoo
cereal.
For Coco Puffs.
You don't stink. Get it? Skunk, you don't skink. Skunk, you don't skink. Skunk, you don't stink. I don't know.
Now we're not only butchering names,
but
we're butchering animals.
But
we're butchering animals as well.
Hey, this is a vegetarian show.
Oh, sorry.
No animals were harmed in the production of this show.
Hey, I love PETA. People eating tasty animals.